I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. You can read me at kslsports.com. Download the KSL Sports app and make sure you get all of our content, including my Utah Jazz coverage and my NBA draft coverage at kslsports.com and the KSL Sports app. You can also follow us on Twitter at KSL Sports, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, both at KSL Sports, and you can find me, as I mentioned again, on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. All right, special episode today. We get you ready for the NBA draft. I think I've finished my pre-draft breakdowns. 22 different players that could be available for the Jazz with the 23rd overall pick. I didn't include Yoeli Childs and Sam Merrill, who I have breakdowns for both of our local prospects as well. You can find those at kslsports.com. I've also tweeted them out. I just don't think they're realistic options for the Jazz at 23, so I did not include them in this breakdown. This is my big board. After watching all these players, highlights, full games, trying to get as much info on them as I can, this is how I laid them out. I'm nervous about this because this is a really good way to come back and make me look stupid in a couple of years for some of these guys that are unquestionably going to be out of the league. Some of the guys I've got ranked low coming back and being very good players, but that's the nature of the draft, and I think it's fun. The idea of this is to give you Jazz fans just kind of a casual idea of who these players are, what they do, and how they fit. I just don't think fans have as much time to read up on 22 players, so I'm going to give you a quick abbreviated idea of who these guys are and something you can listen to and enjoy and something we can look back on and see how I did as far as my coverage of the draft goes. So this is the Utah Jazz NBA Draft Big Board from kslsports.com. My number one player on the big board for the Jazz, I don't think he'll be available at 22 or 23, but on the off chance that he is, a couple of mocks have him in the 20s. That means he could slip, is Tyrese Maxey, the freshman guard from Kentucky. The reason I have Tyrese Maxey atop my board is because I like his ability or his potential to become a star. I think he has real star potential compared to most players in the draft that could be available where the Jazz are picking. And I also think he has a relatively high floor compared to a lot of guys who are going to be boom or bust that will show up on this list. I think even if he doesn't hit his star potential, which is kind of leading scorer, 20 point per game, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, really good defensive player who can really shoot the ball. If he doesn't hit those, and there's some reason to think he might not, if he doesn't get those, I still think he's going to be a very good backup point guard in the NBA or combo guard who's going to find a way to stick. I just think he's too special not to stick around in the NBA. 6'3", 200 pounds, had some enormous moments at Kentucky, young. He's just he really has the star potential. You can read about it in my breakdown. Averaged 14 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. The concern is that he shot 42% from the floor and just 29% from the three-point line. I would tell you, I would not worry as much about his three-point shooting because he had to spend so much time next to Ashton Hagans, who's also a very good prospect in the draft. He might be the best defensive guard in the draft, but Hagans is a total non-shooter at guard for Kentucky, which I think put a lot of the burden on Tyrese Maxey to have to shoot more threes than he's comfortable with. And if you put him next to an adequate shooter that can get him more space, that doesn't force him to shoot off the dribble as much, I think he comes back and has a much better percentage in the NBA. So good body, good defensive player, good athlete, really smart, I mean, super high basketball IQ, and then still has a ton of untapped potential. The way we've seen guards at Kentucky show, Tyler Hero is a good example of that. Devin Booker is a good example of that. So Tyrese Maxey is the top player on my draft board. I don't think he'll be there when the Jazz are picking at 23. If he is, you absolutely have to take him. Coming in at number two on my big board, Aaron Nesmith, the wing, the sophomore from Vanderbilt. Aaron Nesmith is probably the best shooter in the draft, and I'll give you his numbers. He comes in with great measurements, 6'6", 6'10", wingspan. That's exactly what you want to see in the modern NBA guard. And then you look at his numbers, 23 points a game at Vanderbilt as a sophomore, 4.9 rebounds, less than an assist, which is concerning, but 51% from the floor, 52% from the three-point line on over 8 threes a game. Now, it's a little deceptive because he only ended up playing 14 games at Vanderbilt as a sophomore. His numbers were nowhere near that impressive as a freshman. He got hurt before the SEC game started, so we didn't even get into conference play. It was a foot break, which is concerning. I mean, there's some, not red flags, but some reasons to not believe that he's a 23 point per game scorer who shot 50% from three at 6'6 with a 6'10 wingspan. But if it does translate, and if he does get wide open looks at the NBA, which Quinn Snyder and the Jazz do, he becomes really intriguing, and he takes a lot of pressure off the Jazz scorers. He opens up lanes for them. He is not a great playmaker. Like I said, he does averages less than an assist a game, but when you're shooting 50% from the three-point line, you really probably should never pass. He's an okay defensive player. He's certainly not an elite defensive player, despite his measurables. He's only an average athlete. So there's some question marks about him. Again, most mock drafts have him going in the teens. I think I've seen one or two that had him slip to 19 or 20, which is why I included him in my breakdowns. But as the best shooter in the draft with NBA size, it's just really hard to imagine him not finding a way to stick around in the NBA. I think he's got very low bust potential. He's got some star potential because he shoots it so well, even if he doesn't turn into a great, great player and doesn't have the athleticism to get there. I think he can do enough things at his size to be intriguing that he's worth taking a risk on, and that's why he comes in at number two on my draft board for the Utah Jazz. Coming in at number three, Precious Achiuwa, the big man, freshman, out of Memphis, very intriguing, enormous size, moves his feet incredibly well. Precious Achiuwa comes into the NBA with an NBA body, 6'9", 225 pounds, averaged 16 points, 11 rebounds, 1 assist, shot 49% from the floor, 32% from the three-point line, just 59% from the free throw line, so there's some concern that his three-point shooting at over 30% really might not translate. But he moves his feet on the perimeter as well as any big man in this draft. And you know, it's not like Tony Bradley or Rudy Gobert out there trying to move his feet. It's just a totally different animal. He's a freak athlete. Think the way Jeremy Grant, is able to move his feet for Denver. He's got that kind of quickness, but a much bigger body. He's an animal out there. So he's really fun to watch. Gets a ton of points off of just cutting to the rim, catching alley-oops, dunks easily in the half court, meaning he can jump in traffic, grabs the ball on a rebound and will just take off running with it, can put the ball on the floor a little bit, which is intriguing for his face-up game. There's a lot to like there. There's a ton of raw tools, and his physical abilities are so strong that he was incredibly productive in the AAC last year. Remember James Wiseman, who's expected to be a top three pick, committed to Memphis, only played a couple of games and dropped out. Achiuwa really stepped in and was incredible and lived up to his billing as a top 40 recruit, I want to say maybe even higher in the country. So he's really, really impressive. Needs to make sure he kind of plays under control on the offensive side of the ball. But if you put him into the Rudy Gobert role or what Derek Favors used to do next to Joe Ingles coming off the bench, which is set screens, roll to the hoop, catch lobs, play defense, you're going to get a lot out of him. So I don't think you have to ask that much out of him to be a good player. And then if he does develop some more of his skill set or does start to shoot the three a little bit, he's got some Montrezl Harrell-type offensive skill set despite being a significantly better defender. And if you do that, I mean, you're talking about you know, kind of a Bam Adebayo light type of player. So he's got really high potential. I think his floor is actually a little bit better than I think some people project if you put him in the right system. And he's the type of guy that feels like Quinn Snyder knows how to use. Coming in at number four on my board, this is the first one where I think I'm probably going to get some blowback from Jazz fans. I like him because I think he's so safe. I know safe isn't that exciting in the first round, but he fills a role that I think the Jazz are going to need. And that's Trey Jones, the sophomore guard out of Duke, 6'3", 185 pounds, 16 points a game, 4 rebounds, 6.5 assists, shot 42% from the floor, 36% from the three-point line, 77% from the free throw line. Maybe the best defensive point guard in the draft. There's a couple of guys who could vie for that title. Ashton Hagens, who I already mentioned, belongs in that conversation as well. Yam Matter, who I'll talk about coming up as well, could be in that conversation. But Trey Jones really locked players down at Duke. You can watch the game he had against Cole Anthony, who shows up on this list, to see just kind of what he can do on the ball, what he does off the ball. Super smart. Brother's already in the NBA. He's a backup for the Memphis Grizzlies. Played with Zion Williamson, RJ Barrett, all those kids that came out of Duke last year. So he's played with NBA guys, plus his brother his whole life. I think his adjustment to the NBA is going to be relatively smooth as a result. Three-point shooting made a significant jump from his sophomore year to his or freshman year to his sophomore year because he was getting more looks. He got more comfortable playing for Mike Krzyzewski, won the ACC Player of the Year and the ACC Defensive Player of the Year. Not many guys ever do that, and the ones that do end up playing for a long time. Shane Battier is a very good example of a player who did that. So I just think he's the type of player that you can count on being in the NBA. You can't do that with most draft picks, especially at the end of the first round. I think he fills a need for the Jazz, where they were seriously lacking a good point guard and guard defender in the playoffs. You can imagine him going up and guarding Jamal Murray if he had to, even though Jamal's bigger than he is. He can get into you like that, and I think that's why he's intriguing, but smart, and has a better offensive skill set than some of these other, you know, kind of defensive-minded point guards that we see in the NBA. Patrick Beverley is a good example. That have to play that way because they're so lacking offensively. Trey Jones is not lacking offensively. He just happens to also be a very good defensive player. So I like his balance on both sides of the floor. He's got a projectable skill set with his defense. Trey Jones comes in at number four on my board. Higher than most people are going to have him, but I think he's a really good player. Coming in at number five, Kyra Lewis. Kyra Lewis on most mock drafts is projected in the late lottery, early teens, or late teens, I should say. So he's one of the guys who I think most people have above Trey Jones. I really like him too. Amazingly quick. Good size at 6'3". Apparently he's put on a bunch of weight. He was 165 as a sophomore at Alabama, so there's concerns about how thin he is. But he's also young for being a sophomore. He reclassified as a senior in high school, I should say as a junior in high school, so he could join Alabama as an 18-year-old. So he's still just 19 years old. Coming into the NBA, shot 44% from the floor, 36% from the free throw line, 36% from the three-point line, 79% from the free throw line. Good defensive player, not great. You'd like him to be a little bit better with his measurables and his speed, but with the ball in his hands, he's one of the fastest players in the draft. He and RJ Hampton are probably the two quickest guys. Doesn't waste steps, takes long strides, gets out in transition and is a blur, somewhat like De'Aaron Fox. I think that's probably what you hope his upside is. He probably never gets there. De'Aaron's a really good player. But I think that's what you're kind of hoping. So Kyra Lewis is that type of guy. He's not a true point guard. He had a lot of turnover issues at Alabama. I think he was at like 3.5 turnovers to 5 assists. So he's still in the positive there, but certainly not kind of the 6-2 that you'll traditionally see 3-1 to reduce that down for you. He's not that type of point guard. He's a little bit more of a 2 guard. So he could play next to Donovan Mitchell. If he can develop as a point guard, he could play the 1 and you could leave Donovan at the 2. He fits. He could fit what the Jazz are doing. He actually has some promising shooting numbers despite that 36% three-point shooting, which is only kind of average. He's got some promising shooting numbers on open looks and spot-up jumpers. So he could end up being a much better shooter in the NBA. And if he does that with his speed and his size, he's really good. I would just like to see a little bit more out of him defensively to live up to that that speed that he has. And I would just like to see a little bit better passing. And I didn't see it as much as I thought. So he's not as safe as some of these other picks, but he'll pan out. I think he's going to be in the NBA, just like I think Trey Jones is going to be in the NBA. Another guy that falls on this list comes in at number 6 on my board. That is Cole Anthony, the guard freshman guard out of North Carolina, was a top five recruit in the country before he joined North Carolina. Things absolutely fell apart. It was just a terrible team. He was injured, ended up missing time in the middle of the season. North Carolina wasn't good when he was on the floor. They were even worse when he was off the floor. But he finished his college career with averages of 18.5 points, super impressive, impressive for a freshman, 5.7 rebounds, 4 assists. You love those numbers, but you hate that he shot just 38% from the floor, 34% from the free throw line, and 75% from the – or I should say, sorry – 38% from the floor, 34% from the three-point line, and 75% from the free throw line. So let me get that straight for you. Those numbers are just not very good. And the free throw shooting, like if it was 85, you'd feel better about the other numbers. It being 75 is a little questionable. Plays with an incredible motor, clearly has a knack for scoring, incredible athlete, can finish on top of the rim, plays really, really hard, kind of an animal out there. You just have to wonder, is he going to be able to change his game if he has to from being a star in high school and a star in college to being a supporting level player in the NBA? Because he can't shoot those numbers and be a star. That's kind of the real question mark about him. It's a little loose with his dribble. Injury concerns are there because he kind of plays a little bit like Russell Westbrook, kind of dives into crowds. Russ has had a bunch of knee injuries because of his athleticism, because of his reckless play. Cole Anthony does the same thing. But his dad's a longtime player. He knows the game. He's played against good guys his whole life. You can see that. Might have been much better had he played at a better team. North Carolina is usually good, but just did not have the horses this year. So I think that's why there's a lot of encouraging things about Cole Anthony. His raw numbers are really impressive, just his like kind of traditional averages. His shooting percentages are scary. But it's hard to imagine him not being in the NBA in the next 5 years. I just think he's a guy who's going to stick around and still has really high potential. All right, kind of the opposite of that player comes in at number 7 on my board. That's Cassius Winston, the guard from Michigan State. He's probably the best pick-and-roll player in the draft. I really love him. If I was just basing this on guys I like to watch play, Cassius Winston might be on the top of my board. But understanding he's got a few limitations that could keep him from being as high-level a player as some of the other guys I've ranked ahead of him. He's only 6'1", 185 pounds, averaged 18.5 points his senior year at Michigan State, 5.9 assists, 2.5 rebounds, shot 46% from the floor, 43% from the three-point line, 84% from the free throw line, so his efficiency is off the charts. Turns the ball over a little bit, probably more than a senior guard should, but really is a floor general. Plays like a bully, kind of reminds me a little bit of Kyle Lowry, even though he doesn't quite have that big a frame. Certainly not as good a rebounder or defender as Lowry was in his prime, but plays extremely smoothly. If you go under on a screen on the pick and roll, he's going to hit a three. If you go over, he's going to find the big man rolling. He made Xavier Tillman look like a very high-level player, and I'll have some question marks about him coming up before the end of this podcast. But fun to watch. Super steady. A winner. I mean, Michigan State basically won every game at home, seemingly when he was on the floor. He's just extremely solid. Knows the game as well as anybody in the draft, certainly on the offensive side of the ball. He's just a very kind of a throwback point guard, but he will be in the NBA for a long time. He's going to be a name just to get to know. You know, you see these guys who are big-bodied guards who go late in the first round or in the second round and end up sticking around for a long time, like Fred Van Vliet or Jalen Brunson, and you're just thinking, man, how did that guy not go higher? That's who Cassius Winston's going to be in this draft. I basically guarantee it. He's just too good of a shooter, too smart, too good with the ball in his hands to not be around long term. We start picking this up a little bit as we get a little bit further down the draft board. Coming at number 8, Tyler Bay, wing slash guard from Colorado. He's a junior. He might be the most disruptive wing defender in the draft off the ball. He just is always in passing lanes. He's so long and he's so athletic. He blows up plays. He's a 43.5 inch vertical that just came out yesterday. He's just freakishly athletic, smart, always in the way, catches a lot of lobs, shot a surprising 41% from the three-point line at Colorado during his junior year. That was his last season, but really didn't take a whole lot, so that number's pretty questionable. If he can hit the three at above 35% and play defense like he does, he's awesome. He's one of the best kind of 3-and-D prospects, though he doesn't put the ball on the floor a lot. He's not a playmaker. but his just raw talent, if he can knock down open shots and then wreak havoc on the other side of the ball, is awesome. He also has a chance that he's not in the NBA because he's so raw offensively. If the three-point shooting really doesn't exist, or if he can't find himself in a role where he gets the opportunity to catch lobs and get out in transition, he just might not be effective enough defensively in an offensive-driven league to stick around in the NBA. But if those things click, he's going to be absolutely fantastic. And I think he makes it. I think he's a safer bet to make it. But there is a little bit of a total bust potential there for Tyler Bay. Again, 6'7", 220 pounds, can play the 2, the 3, and the 4, probably more a 3 and a 4 in the NBA, but absolutely incredible defensively. Coming in at number 9 on my big board, freshman out of Washington, Isaiah Stewart. I think a lot of people probably thought I was going to say Jaden McDaniels. We'll talk about him in a minute. Isaiah Stewart, the former number 2 overall recruit in the country, played 1 year at Washington, 6'9", 250 pounds, can play both front court positions, averaged 17 points, 9 rebounds, less than an assist a game, shot 57% from the floor, 25% from the three-point line, and 77% from the free throw line. He's a bully. He reminds me a lot of Derek Favors, kind of late-career Derek Favors. Has a decent face-up game, but really just gets things done because he's so strong. Has an NBA body coming in, going to push guys out of the way to get rebounds, offensive rebounds, defensive rebounds. You can give him the ball, and he can score with a variety of jump hooks, has really good feet, smart, even though his passing numbers kind of don't reflect his feel for the game. I really like him. I think he's got some upside, and then the belief in NBA circles is that three-point shot's going to develop a little bit because he has a 77% free throw shooter. If he could get that up into 35%, mid-30s from three and take a couple of game, he becomes really intriguing as a rebounder and three-point shooter. So that's Isaiah Stewart, the big man out of Washington, who was an enormously high recruit and apparently is blowing away teams in the interview process. So that's a guy to keep an eye on for sure. Coming in at number 10, maybe the most popular name you hear for Jazz fans as far as guys that they should draft coming in at 23 on a lot of mock drafts, Josh Green, freshman wing out of Arizona. 6'6", 210 pounds, 12 points a game, 4.6 rebounds, 2.6 assists, 42% from the floor, 36% from three, 78% from the free throw line, 6'6", 6'10 wingspan. He just has the prototypical guard wing body in the NBA right now. Pretty good athlete. Numbers are only okay. Played with two other freshmen that took a lot of or got a lot of attention at Arizona, Nico Mannion and Zeke Nagy, both of who we'll talk about, and that might have deflated his numbers a little bit. Looks to have a little bit more to his offensive game than he showed at Arizona, but the opportunities might not have been there. I do worry about his three-point shooting not quite translating as much as everyone would hope. He kind of feels like a guy who should shoot 40% and just doesn't, and that's a concern about him. But otherwise, he's probably pretty safe. There's a lot of guys in the league like Josh Green who stick around, and some of them are journeymen, and some of them end up as staples on NBA rosters. That's not a bad thing if you find him with the number 23 overall pick. Coming in at number 11 on the board, maybe the biggest kind of boom or bust player on the board that could be there at number 23 for the Jazz, though a lot of people think he's going to be gone in the late lottery. That's Alexei Pokuševski, the 7-foot-tall wing/big man who plays at Olympiakos right now. He's on their B squad. Averaged 9.9 points, 7 rebounds, almost 3 assists, shot just 40% from the floor, 32% from the three-point line, and 78% from the free-throw line. He has incredible fluidity for a player his size. 7 feet tall, he has a 7'3 wingspan. He plays pretty big on the defensive side of the floor, but he moves his feet really quickly, blocks shots, can put the ball on the floor on offense, gets around, has change of pace, change of direction moves with the ball in his hands, can rise up and shoot over players. There's just really not a lot of 7-footers in the world that move the way he does. I mean, you're talking about Kevin Durant, you're talking about Giannis Antetokounmpo. There aren't guys that big that move that quickly. He's got to add strength, he's got to get bigger. Durant did that, Giannis did that. If Pokuševski can do that, he'll be really intriguing and could be a very high-level player. Passes super well, makes plays for his teammates, but the shooting numbers are concerning. And you're going to bank on him having to shoot the ball to be a good player. 7 feet tall, 200 pounds, has to get significantly bigger, and then has to shoot better than 40% from the floor and 32% from the three-point line, and only doing that, shooting those low in numbers against kind of the developmental league of the Euro League is a little concerning. So that's why there's questions there, but his upside is so tantalizing, he'd be hard to pass on if he's there at number 23 for the Jazz. Coming in at number 12 on the big board, again, there's 22 of these, Terrell Terry, the freshman guard out of Stanford, maybe the biggest surprise name to show up in the first round of the draft, but had a great season at Stanford. 14.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, 3.2 assists, shot 44% from the floor, 40% from the three-point line, 89% from the free throw line, so you know his shooting numbers are legit. And he shoots the way Trae Young shoots. He kind of shoots the way Steph shoots. He dribbles into these crazy pull-ups. He'll shoot from 30 feet. I mean, he will pull up from basically anywhere past half court. Really nifty with the ball in his hands. Good passer. Like, he looks like the modern star guard. He's not very big, as I mentioned, just 6'2" and 160 pounds, so that's a concern. Probably never going to be a great defensive player. Neither is Steph. Neither is Trae Young. He certainly didn't carry the offensive load that those guys had. I think that's really important to remember. When we talk about how good Steph was, he averaged more than 21 points every single season that he was at Davidson. Trae Young, while facing triple teams and quadruple teams, averaged 27 points a game at Oklahoma. Terrell Terry is nowhere near that at 14 points a game, but he kind of looks like them when he plays. That's the style of guy you're getting, but he's going to be a poor man's version of that. How much is that worth? You know, maybe he's Seth Curry. Seth Curry is still a really good player, but don't expect Trae Young or Steph Curry, even though when you watch his highlights, that's what he's going to look like, and that's why he comes in at number 12 on my board. Coming in at number 13, Desmond Bain, senior guard out of TCU. He's easy to project and easy to like as an NBA player. 6'6", 215, 16.5 points a game during his senior season, 6 rebounds, almost 4 assists. You love those numbers. His shooting numbers are really impressive. 49% from the floor, 43% from the three-point line, 80% from the free throw line. So, like, the shooting is very real. It's very legitimate. I think he only had one season at TCU where he shot below 40% from the three-point line. So, he's a shooter. His shot is super funky. He kind of slingshots it. I mean, he kind of throws it with two hands a little bit. But it goes in, so there's no reason to argue with it. Like, it would be silly to come in and try and change his shot, considering how often it goes in. Strong guard. Like I said, bulky frame at 215 pounds. Can play defense, certainly. I don't think he's this lockdown defender that for some reason he's earned this reputation as. You've probably read about him a little bit. He's not a lockdown defensive player. He lacks terrific athleticism, doesn't really finish on top of the rim, but he finishes really efficiently in college. So when you watch him, it doesn't really make sense that his numbers are as good as they are, but they are. So the results are there, even if he doesn't necessarily pass the eye test. And I think there's something about that, especially considering he did it at 4 years. Now, for 4 years in college, I should say. TCU is not a great school. It's not a great basketball school, certainly, but you think of his NBA readiness, you think of how proven he was at the college level. Like Isaiah Stewart, he's blowing people away in the draft interview process. He would easily fit in with what the Jazz are doing. I don't know if he can step in and take the Royce O'Neal job. He doesn't dribble the ball at all, so he's not a playmaker, even though he averaged 4 assists a game. Like, I don't think it translates as well to the NBA as it did in college, and because TCU really didn't have many other options, he really had to do a lot. But he's a good player, and he seems like a pretty safe bet to be in the NBA for a long time. Desmond Bane comes in at number 13 on my board. Number 14, Zeke Nnaji, the freshman big man out of Arizona. I've wavered on him a little bit. I went back and watched him again, and it's just impossible to argue with the fact that he's 6'11", he's 240 pounds, he runs the floor extremely well, jumps extremely well, catches lobs, finishes on top of the rim, smooth face-up game. Averaged 16 points, 8 rebounds, less than an assist, but shot 57% from the floor, 29% from the three-point line, 76% from the free throw line. He just was so productive as a freshman, even though Arizona seriously underachieved. It's hard to imagine him not making it in the NBA. I think he's going to be around for a while. He's not a good defensive player, which I don't like from freshmen or from centers that are tall and athletic. Like, you should be blocking shots. He averaged less than a block a game. That's concerning. Those are bad numbers. That's kind of a feel problem. But he's so good on the offensive side of the ball and so productive and has a good motor on the glass. I think that's he's going to be around. He's going to stick around in the NBA. He just might not play tough enough defensively to be a long-term impact player and might not be able to be a starter. But if he can play the four with his size, with how well he moves, it's kind of reasonable, though he's not a very good defender on the perimeter. With the Jazz, you could move Bogey to the three, have Zeke Nnaji at the four, Rudy Gobert at the five, and all of a sudden you have three guys who are basically 6'9 or 6'10 on the floor or bigger with good length and good athleticism. Like, it's intriguing. It makes sense there. But I don't think he serves as a long-term replacement for Rudy Gobert. I don't think he has that type of potential. But he's a good player, and he'll be in the NBA for a while. That's why I'm at number 14 on my board. Coming at number 15, another name you hear, very commonly associated with the Jazz, seems to have growing interest, might be gone by the time the Jazz are drafting right now. Theo Maledon, the guard, 19, out of France, had very nice numbers in France, was on his way to win the kind of the rookie of the year in France that some of the best players to ever come over from Europe have won. 6'4", 179 pounds, 7 points, little under 2 rebounds, 3 assists, shot 45% from the floor, 36% from the free throw line. Concerning, only 68% from the free throw line. There's some question marks there, but the rest of his shooting and his form looks pretty good. Last year, like I said, the free throw shooting percentage was just 68%. The rest of his career, it's been at 82, so that's probably more encouraging and less of a small sample size. So there's things to like there. 6'8" wingspan, good pick and roll player. I get it. NBA size, 6'4", you could play him next to Donovan Mitchell if Donovan wanted to play the one. You could play him at the point guard, keep Donovan at the two. There's a lot to like there. Super smooth with the ball in his hands. The downsides are he's not very quick. He has to rely on his size, but at 6'4", 6'8", he's plenty big. He's not a great defensive player despite those measurables. Like, you would think he would be able to stay in front of guys better, and he gets burned off the dribble a lot. He doesn't get any separation with the ball in his hands, so he relies a lot on screens, which is fine. I mean, you know, a lot of guys do. But he's going to have to prove he can then pull up and shoot over you if he has to pull it from the mid-range. Those are just some of the things that make it a little bit more difficult, I think, for him to succeed in the NBA. But teams seem to really like him. He's worked with Tony Parker, another French point guard, and kind of is in one of his clubs, I believe. So there's intrigue there. I get it. I get the intrigue. I don't like him as much as some of the other guard prospects in the draft that I've got ranked higher. But Theo Maledon comes in at number 15. Coming in at number 16, another very popular name amongst Jazz fans. He's actually the first player I broke down. Super polarizing for a lot of people, not just me. It's, of course, Jaden McDaniels, the Washington freshman wing, coming in at 6'10", or excuse me, let me pull up his numbers here, 6'9", 200 pounds, averaged 13 points, almost 6 rebounds, 2 assists, but shot just 40% from the floor, 33% from the three-point line, and 76% from the free-throw line. Look, when you watch him, and if you just watch his highlights, and you see him putting the ball on the floor at 6'9", with super long arms and legs, and pulling up and shooting over people, or getting to the rim and dunking on people, pulling up in transition and hitting crazy threes, and looking like Brandon Ingram or Kevin Durant, you're going to love him. And then if you kind of watch him during games where he floats, meaning he's just like not engaged in the action, he seems to get frustrated easily, he gets washed out of plays, needs to put in a lot of work on his body at 200 pounds, has some weird, I don't know if I believe the attitude problems as much as some people build him up, but got a lot of technical fouls, fouled out of a lot of games at Washington. There's enough red flags there to think that he might not make it in the NBA and might be all body. I have a hard time thinking he doesn't make it in the NBA. I think he can do enough on the defensive side of the ball that if you let his offensive game develop, he could be really good and could be one of the best players in the draft. But even then, I think his worst-case scenario probably isn't totally washed out of the league just because he's so big and because he's so intriguing. Teams will keep taking chances on him. I do think he needs to be in a place that keeps his interest up. I think playing with better players might help him. I think one of the problems at Washington was there was this expectation of him going there with Isaiah Stewart for this to be a really good team, and they were terrible, and he lost interest and started thinking about the NBA really quickly. Washington doesn't have the culture of a Kansas or a Duke or a Kentucky or a North Carolina where there's an expectation to win all the time. Maybe if you'd put him under that type of pressure, we could have learned more about him. It doesn't exist at Washington. So that really wasn't there. It didn't have great leadership on that team. There's a lot of reasons to think that's why he didn't pan out. Also, he's so good and has so many physical gifts, he probably should have been better than he was at Washington. He's hard to project of what he's going to be at the next level, but he's so intriguing and has true star potential. If he's there at 23 and the Jazz picked him, he would be exciting for Jazz fans, but he's not going to come in and help next year. He's at least 2 years away. All right, coming in at number 17, a guy who shows up much higher than where the Jazz are selecting on a lot of drafts. Basically, no mock drafts do I see that have him available anymore at 23, but that's Jalen Smith, the sophomore big man out of Maryland. 15.5 points, 10.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 53% from the floor, 36% from the three-point line, 75% from the free throw line. Really projects as kind of a floor-spacing big man who can play the four and the five. Is a good jumper, but isn't a great athlete. Like, I bet his athletic numbers are really good. If you watched him in an open gym, he'd probably really wow you. And then you get him on the floor, and he's just a little bit boxy. He's not clumsy, but he's just not super fluid like a player like Zeke Nnaji, who just kind of runs up and down the floor, finishes lobs super easily. I just don't think he's quite that quick twitch. He's not that fluid. So I get it. I think there's NBA comps for him. I think Jamichael Green is the type of player he's going to project to be. He's really going to have to make sure that three-point shooting clicks in. 36% is a good number. If he can keep that up, he'll be just fine. He blocks shots as a weak side shot blocker. You could see him playing next to Rudy Gobert at the four, though he's not a playmaker. There's things to like. There's enough tools there. I don't think he'll be there when the Jazz are drafting, and honestly, I think there's other big men that are going to be better in the long term. Coming in at number 18 on my big board, Robert Woodard, the wing out of Mississippi State. He's polarizing for me. I get why people really like him, and I know a couple local guys really like him. 6'7", 235 pounds, plays on the wing, averaged 11.5 points, 6.5 rebounds, 1.3 assists, 49% from the floor, 43% from the three-point line, just 64% from the free-throw line. Here's what I think of Robert Woodard. Crazy athlete when he has space and room to jump. Pretty good motor at times, but it does lack. He seems to float in and out of games sometimes. I worry, as an NBA body, NBA fluidity, as an athlete, like all that's going to step in right away, and he can probably be on an NBA floor from a physical standpoint. I worry that he didn't dominate college at all. Like 11 points a game. I want to say he was the fourth leading scorer at Mississippi, despite having probably a top 6 or 7 body in college basketball last year. At his size, with his fluidity, and his ability to shoot 43% from the floor, like, why isn't he Patrick Williams from Florida State? Why isn't he one of these kind of, you know, high lottery pick wings that we're talking about? Isaac Okoro, who from Auburn is a really good defensive stopper. Like, why doesn't it all add up? And I just think it's a passiveness and like an inability to really impose his will on games. Like, it should be there, and it wasn't. Now, the argument against that is that the guards at Mississippi State were high scorers and wanted to shoot a lot and didn't move the ball around very much. And I could believe that for sure, because I saw it with my eyes. I mean, you can absolutely see that from Mississippi State's guards. But he should be able to take over games, and he didn't. And then his assist-to-turnover ratio was awful. Like, he turns the ball over a lot for a guy who can't dribble. And I don't think he can dribble. So he didn't take a ton of threes, even though he shot 43%. His freshman year, he was not a good shooter. It made a very steep jump his sophomore season. So there's things to like. I also think there's some question marks, and there's a chance he doesn't actually even make it in the NBA if he can't play harder or impose his will the way I would like to see him do more, and he didn't. But he's a good player. I want to make sure this is obvious. All of these guys could be really good picks for the Jazz. I get why all of them are projected here. They're top 30 prospects in the world. I mean, that's why they're all sitting at this number. They all have a real chance to make it, as does Robert Woodard. There were some things there that I didn't love. All right, coming in at number 19, Leandro Bolmaro, the super intriguing guard, wing, do-it-all, ball-in-hand, Argentine player, who now is in Barcelona. He's a draft and stash. He's not coming over this year. I dinged him a little bit for that because there's always a fear that guys won't come over. He only averaged 3 points and 1 rebound and 2 assists playing with the B, or with Barcelona this year. But that was their top team, so you wouldn't expect his numbers to be very good at his young age. He's so incredibly gifted with the ball in his hands. He can get anywhere on the floor he wants to. There's not many guys at 6'7 and 180 pounds that move like he does. Can, you know, jump over people in the half court. Makes unbelievable highlight level passes. A ton of flair, a ton of flash. If it all clicks in and he reaches his potential, he could be really good. His shooting numbers are horrendously terrifying and could keep him out of the NBA entirely. 33%, as I mentioned, from the floor, 22% from the three-point line. Though he did shoot 94% from the free throw line, it was on like no attempts, and he just happened to make the very few that he shot. In last season, 2018-2019, he shot 42% from the floor and 29% from the three-point line across all of his kind of professional play. So even though he's playing against lesser competition then, his shooting numbers still weren't great. He's intriguing, smart, playmaker. It's not going to matter if he can't shoot, and that's the question mark about him. Plus, he's not going to come over right away. So that's why I've got him a little bit lower on my board. That's why most people do, I think. There's just so many question marks about him, but he's fun. He's exciting to watch. Coming in at number 20, Xavier Tillman. This is the guy on my board who might make me look stupidest if you read what everyone else says about him. I think there's a lot of hope that he turns into the smartest big man in the NBA, who plays in the pick and roll and excels in the short roll and is a playmaker for a big guy at 6'8", 245 pounds, 13.5 points a game, 10 rebounds, 3 assists, 58% from the floor, 27% from the three-point line, 69% from the free throw line. So he's got some good numbers. They're certainly not great for a junior. You wouldn't have drafted him after his freshman season, certainly. So I think that's a little bit concerning, like these other big guys, Isaiah Stewart, who has this awesome freshman year, would be significantly better than I think Xavier Tillman is his junior season. Now, he's really smart. I get it. He plays the pick and roll really well as a big man. Like, there's things to like there. I don't think he's freakishly athletic. I don't think he's going to be like a face-up playmaking big man. Maybe a little bit, but not a ton. I worry about his three-point shooting only being 27% for a guy who I think people are banking on being a three-point shooter. But I don't know. He scares me. There's just not enough obviousness there. I think you have to really convince yourself to fall in love with his intelligence. And that's just a dangerous thing to do in the NBA draft. Like, guys should absolutely jump out to you really easily. And upperclassmen, juniors and seniors should really jump out the way Cassius Winston did, where, oh, he knows the game so much better than everybody. And I think you can say that about Tillman, but I don't know if he has the body or the athleticism for it to really flourish at the next level. I don't ever see him starting games. I don't think he's physically gifted enough to be there. So you're talking about a backup big, and like how much money or how many first round draft picks do you want to use on a guy who doesn't have the potential to start? I think that's what scares me. And also, a lot of his great play, I worry, especially as a role man, was because he was playing with Cassius Winston, who's just by far the best pick and roll player in the draft. So If every big guy got to play with Cassius Winston, their numbers would look great. They would look smart. The spacing would look incredible around them. They don't get that opportunity. So I just have too many questions about Xavier Tillman. I really don't like him as much as some people do, where they've got him as one of the best big men in the second half of the first round. I probably wouldn't use a first round pick on him. Coming in at number 21, another guy who could make me look silly, but hasn't really showed any reason why that will be the case coming out of college. Nico Mannion, the freshman point guard from Arizona, has ties to the state of Utah. His dad, Pace, played at the University of Utah, played for the Jazz for a little bit, had an offer from the University of Utah, took a visit, I think, but didn't commit, decided to go to Arizona. Averaged 14 points, 5 assists, 2 rebounds during his freshman season, but shot just 39% from the floor, 32% from the three-point line, and 79% from the free-throw line. Not a great defensive player, but okay. I don't think he projects to be absolutely horrendous. Really, for him to be able to continue to be an offensive threat, he's going to have to show he can get into the paint, which he basically never did at Arizona. He's got NBA range on his jumper, on his three-point shot. He can pull up in transition. It looks like an NBA three, but again, it only went in 32% of the time. So he's got kind of some Cole Anthony question marks as well, which is a super high recruit who just didn't ever fully see it come together, and Cole Anthony was certainly far more productive at North Carolina, though he had less talent around him than Nico Mannion did at Arizona. So there are flashes, certainly. I just don't think he makes sense for the Jazz at 23. That's really why I've got him down my board. I won't be at all surprised if he makes it in the NBA. I won't be surprised if he's around for 8 or 10 years. You know, having NBA DNA, playing against the talent he's played against, they're all promising. But he didn't show enough at Arizona to feel like he's better than any of these other point guards on the board, and I think that's why I've got him so far down. And that's why he comes in at number 21 on my draft board. Coming in at number 22, the final player on the board, Yam Mader, the point guard from Israel, 19 years old. He's intriguing. He might be better than Nico Mannion. In fact, he could be better than a lot of these guys that show up. He plays really aggressively. Like, he really gets into you on the defensive side of the ball. Looks like Patrick Beverley a little bit defensively, like wants to be in your shorts, wants to try and rip your dribble from you every chance he can. That's good and bad because I think he puts pressure on younger players. I promise you Chris Paul will just burn him the first several times they match up. In fact, most guards will. You can't really pick the pocket of players that often in the NBA the way he tries to in Europe. He averaged 9 points, 2 rebounds, 3.2 assists, shot 44% from the floor, just 27% from the three-point line, but was an 80% free throw shooter. So you hope that those shooting numbers climb, certainly from the three-point line. He's 6'3". He's 180 pounds. On the offensive side of the ball, he plays really flashy. He like dribbles the ball hard, which is kind of funny. He looks like Deron Williams without Deron Williams' bulky frame. Like, he kind of plays that same way, which is like a lot of pressure with the ball in his hands on the offensive side, gets in the mid-range, pulls up, kind of hits some crazy runners, herky-jerky crossover moves the way Deron had. Like, I think there's a lot to like there. I just didn't see enough of him, and that is the problem with some of these European guys. There's not as much footage available. Even though they played in these pro leagues, it's hard to find full games. So I put him down at the bottom of my draft board. I just think the other guards are probably safer at this point. It wouldn't surprise me at all, again, if he makes it and sticks around. But I would like to have seen better three-point shooting. But that comes in. That's number 22 on my board, Yam Mader. So again, I'll just go really quickly over these 1 through 22 to give you an idea of who I have and where. Coming in at number 1, Tyrese Maxey, the freshman guard from Kentucky. Number 2, Aaron Nesmith, the wing from Vanderbilt. Number 3, Precious Achiuwa, the big man from Memphis. Number 4, Trey Jones, guard, Duke. Number 5, Kyra Lewis, sophomore guard, Alabama. Number 6, Cole Anthony, freshman guard, North Carolina. Number 7, Cassius Winston, senior guard, Michigan State. Number 8, Tyler Bay, the guard slash wing, junior out of Colorado. Number 9, Isaiah Stewart, the big man, freshman out of Washington. Number 10, Josh Green, the guard slash wing, freshman, Arizona. Alexei Pokuševski, the big man out of Serbia. Number 12, Terrell Terry, freshman guard, Stanford. Number 13, Desmond Bain, senior guard, TCU. Zeke Nagy, the big man, freshman out of Arizona. Theo Maledon, guard, 19, out of France. Jaden McDaniels, the wing, freshman out of Washington. Jalen Smith, the big man, sophomore out of Maryland. Robert Woodard, the wing, sophomore from Mississippi State. Leandro Bomaro, wing, 20, out of Italy and Argentina. Xavier Tillman, the big man, junior from Michigan State. Number 21, Nico Mannion, the guard, freshman out of Arizona. And number 22, Yam Mader, the 19-year-old guard out of Israel. Thanks so much for listening to my Utah Jazz Notes NBA Draft Big Board. Continue to follow our coverage at kslsports.com and find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. You can always DM me and ask me questions, and we'll have full coverage for you leading up to the NBA Draft.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.